This is not a criminal population. And I think that it's a real mischaracterization of them and really unfair.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Dr. Stephen Xenakis, psychiatrist and retired brigadier general, who is a member of the Task Force on Preserving Medical Professionalism in National Security Detention Centers, and Leonard Rubinstein, the lead author on the report, Ethics Abandon, now at Johns Hopkins University's Bloomberg School of Public Health. We will link to the report, Ethics Abandon, Medical Professionalism and Detainee Abuse in the War on Terror, at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. If you'd like a copy of the show, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Ravi Karan, Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today we'll talk about the next steps in the U.S. Department of Justice investigation and settlement with the Portland Police Department.
Friday, November 8th at the Alberta Street Pub, the Creative Music Guild and KBOO are proud to present a special evening with the exciting experimental band known as Kneebody. The Wall Street Journal says putting a finger on a band like Kneebody is a bit like raising it to the wind. At any given moment, the group's artistic inclinations can whip it in unpredictable directions. Opening the show will be the adventurous Portland favorites, Blue Cranes. Blue Cranes' newest album, Swim, shows the band turning yet another musical corner, expanding on their collective and individual strengths while forging into new experimental territory. The Creative Music Guild is an all-volunteer nonprofit promoting experimental and improvised music in Portland for decades. For more information, go to creativemusicguild.org. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of An Evening with Kneebody and Blue Cranes, live at the Alberta Street Pub, 1036 Northeast Alberta, Friday, November 8th. See you there.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Close Guantanamo, a public forum featuring the past president of Veterans for Peace, Elliot Adams, plus Portland's Guantanamo Solidarity Vigilers. Close Guantanamo is co-sponsored by VFP Chapter 72 and the Economic Justice Action and Peace Action Groups of the First Unitarian Church of Portland. Adams will discuss different messages about why we will be better off when Guantanamo is closed from various perspectives: Christian, Muslim, Jewish, those concerned about national security, and the fiscally minded. Close Guantanamo will be at the Elliott Chapel, First Unitarian Church of Portland, on 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue, on November 7th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Hi, this is Per Fogring, host of Fight the Empire. Lester Brown grew up on a farm in New Jersey, and now he writes about the planet's ability to feed all of its people. 50 years ago, he wrote a book called Man, Land, and Food. Then he went on to found the World Watch Institute and the Earth Policy Institute. Thursday, Lester Brown will be my guest on an hour-long special starting at 9 a.m. That's Thursday, November 7th. At 9 a.m., a conversation with Lester Brown on KBOO, your radio station.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on. Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. As you may have heard, there was a press conference yesterday at City Hall that was hosted by Mayor Charlie Hales. Participating were the U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall, the Portland Police Association, Daryl Turner, who's the president of the Portland Police Association, the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, various mental health organizations, and various city council members. And the press conference was held to say that there was a tentative agreement reached with the Portland Police Association as it relates to the implementation of the settlement agreement from the Department of Justice. And so I will stop there and say, so you may remember that there was a 15-month investigation of Portland Police. What you may not remember is that the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, shortly after Erin Campbell was shot and killed by a Portland police officer in April of 2010, sent a letter to the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, asking them to come to Portland and to investigate the patterns and practices of behavior of Portland police to determine whether or not Portland police used excessive force in their interactions with people of color, specifically with African American community members, because the African American community has suffered through various community members unarmed being shot and killed by Portland police. And so the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, they came to town. Thomas Perez came and met with various community members. They conducted an investigation. I have posted on both my Facebook page for Voices from the Edge as well as KBOO's website for Voices from the Edge, the entire investigation, because I think it's important that the public reads the investigation so that they understand the settlement agreement. And so anyway, so there was the 15-month investigation. And once the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division came to town and did their investigation, they did a bait and switch. So they came in and they decided not to investigate the question that was on the table, which is whether or not African Americans' constitutional rights were being violated. But they did a bait and switch and decided to investigate whether people with mental health issues or perceived to have mental health issues, rights were being violated. And I can tell you a little later why they shifted, at least why the reason they gave us. I didn't think it was a good one, but it was a reason they gave us why they made that shift. But they did do an investigation, and they did find out, in fact, that Portland officers use excessive force with people who have mental health issues or who are perceived to have mental health issues. They also found that Portland police used used tasers unjustifiably on people with mental health issues or people perceived to have mental health issues. And the federal government called for a package of reforms to police policies, training, and police oversight. And so that is what is supposed to be in the settlement agreement package. And if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So again, let me lay this out. So anyway, so there was the settlement agreement is filed in federal court. The judge assigned to this case is Judge Michael Simon. And so Judge Michael Simon over the summer put together mediation to attempt to answer the questions that PPA had raised. Important piece is that the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform obtained modified status in front of the federal court. And we're the first community-based group in the country to actually be able to go to federal court and stand side by side with both the Department of Justice, the City of Portland, and the PPA. The PPA also filed to have standing in a federal court, and Judge Simon has not actually ruled on that yet. except as it relates to the contract, which is why we ended up in mediation. And so there was a press conference yesterday that didn't say we had resolved all the issues. Here's what came out of that press conference. So the PPA has agreed that they will not stand in the way of the filing of the settlement agreement with the federal court, but they will retain their right to object to two parts of the settlement agreement. One part is interviewing officers at the scene of an incident. You may remember on this program and many others over the years, we've been just incensed that there's this rule called the 48-hour rule, whereby Portland police officers are allowed to not talk about an incident for 48 hours because, the union says they're traumatized after a shooting or after use of force, and they need 48 hours to actually get their minds back together. But if you and I were at the scene of an incident, we don't have that same right to 48 hours before we actually talk to the police. So that's a big piece. Even the Department of Justice thought that that was insane, that any law enforcement agency would have this rule as part of their contract. And so that's one piece that the union says they have not given up their right to address. And there's a second piece as well that they are concerned about, which is whether or not someone other than a police officer can ask the police officer a question during an investigation. You know, we have the independent police review that is set up to independently review police, even though we know they're not independent, that they rarely review police, and in fact have a really poor record of holding police accountable for inappropriate behavior. And so those are the two issues that Portland Police Association say are still outstanding. So after the press conference yesterday, it became clear that the PPA members, that's the Portland Police Association members, need to vote on this particular whether or not they're going to follow this proposal as to move the settlement agreement forward. And so they have to vote, as well as the city council. Now, the piece that was totally absent from the press conference yesterday was what has been negotiated in the new Portland police contract. As you may know, the contract is up. And part of the negotiating for the new contract was around this Department of Justice mandates of changes. We read those mandates as these are not negotiable. These are mandates that the federal government is dictating that we put in place. And that is what happened at the press conference yesterday. So basically, the press conference said that they've reached a tentative agreement, but they did not provide specific details about what that means. And so why is this so important? Because it is important because of the next step. So this month, in fact, I believe it's on November 18th, the parties go back to the federal court in front of Judge Michael Simon. And at that time, the expectation is that Judge Simon will develop a schedule for the community fairness hearing. And what is a community fairness hearing, you may ask? The community fairness hearing will be the first opportunity that the public has had to weigh in on both the investigative findings from the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division of Portland Police Bureau personnel, as well as the settlement agreement, which lays out a set of reforms that are supposed to fix what the Department of Justice found wrong with Portland Police Bureau. However, I can tell you that if you look at the settlement agreement and you put that right next to the investigation, you would be shocked like I am about some of the remedies that the Department of Justice and the city of Portland under Sam Adams as mayor negotiated as the fixes. And I'll give you a great example. One of the mandates was that a behavioral health unit be established within Portland Police Bureau, so that there would be a team of police officers that were trained and appropriately trained and ready to go out on calls of people who they believed were suffering from mental health crises, some mental health issue. They would team with a mental health professional. So that's the theory of how the behavioral health unit would operate. But the theory of how Police Chief Mike Reese has created the behavioral health unit is his first hire was one of the men who stomped James Chassie to death on the streets in downtown Portland. And so the county sheriff, who we ended up paying millions of dollars out in settlements for these officers that stomped James Chassie to death, he was the first hire that Mike Reese put into his behavioral health unit. So in no universe does that make sense. And so if you're the Department of Justice, why have they not already came in and said to Chief Mike Reese that that was an inappropriate hire and you shouldn't be doing that? And so, but we're supposed to believe that the U.S. Attorney's Office, under the leadership of Amanda Marshall, is going to hold Portland Police accountable under the settlement agreement. And we're supposed to believe that, trust that, you know, Amanda Marshall has it covered. She's going to hold them accountable. Yet, in the time we've been waiting for the settlement agreement to be implemented, Mike Reese, as the police chief, has implemented a whole lot of changes that he says are directed by the settlement agreement. And I could start with one, his use of force policy. Well, since the settlement agreement hasn't been finalized yet, since the settlement agreement has not been filed with the federal court yet, the changes that he is proposing, he does not know whether or not those are the appropriate changes based on what the ultimate settlement agreement will have. But yet, we are spending money. We're spending millions of dollars. We're hiring new staff people. We're hiring more internal investigators in Portland Police Bureau because we want to shorten the time of the investigations. However, if you were at the city council last week and saw the PowerPoint presentation by the IAD director, which is the internal investigative unit of Portland Police Bureau. So these are the people who investigate cops, right, inside Portland Police Bureau. So if you saw the PowerPoint that they presented at City Council last year, what you would notice is that the number of complaints that they even investigate internally has consistently been going down over the years. And so I would ask you, why are we hiring six new investigators inside the Portland Police Bureau if, in fact, they are doing less investigations today than they were doing 10 years ago? So clearly the problem isn't in the number of investigators that they have, but in the quality of investigators that they have and their willingness to hold Portland police officers accountable for their behavior. If you want to join the conversation and figure out how you can get involved in this issue, feel free to give me a call now at 503-231-8187. We're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I am well, Brian. How about you?
Oh, good. Hey, listen, I'm not criticizing you whatsoever, but you know, this is starting to sound like that old Lenny Bruce movie where it just, you know, he ended up getting so bogged down in details
yes.
It completely affected everything he did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was toward the end. But, you know, this is, you know, I mean, Chief Mike Reese is basically, and, you know, if he cared about his image at all, you know, he's thumbing his nose at everybody
yes.
by hiring this person who stomped James Chassie to death. I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy who literally killed somebody.
That's right.
And he's in charge of a crisis unit.
Right. Well, and not only that, I mean, you may remember Todd Wyatt, was the guy that failed sexual harassment training four times.
Sure.
And Mike Reese moved him in to be in charge of the sex crime unit and in charge of two of the women, supervising two of the women that he had already sexually harassed.
I don't think this is a matter of, you know, bad choices or, you know, being naive. I think this is a matter of, you know, and I think we need to look underneath this for not a conspiracy, but an agenda.
Yes.
And the agenda is pretty clear to me. Is like, I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, why are you hiring these people? Well, don't ask why. You know, like, what actually is going on underneath the police department? This is going to be a completely, of course, ineffective unit, which, you know, is basically, it's a level of fraud.
Well, and quite frankly, my premise is, if we're going to spend $26 million, and that's what the price tag is for this settlement agreement, taxpayers are going to spend $26 million to implement a settlement agreement. If we have $26 million, wouldn't it make sense to put it into our mental health system so that mental health professionals would be the first contact for community members experiencing mental health crises?
Well, and you know, one last thing I really want to say is you know, we're going to have to start dismissing these people who have taken power. I mean,
yes.
Completely.
Yes.
And we need to look at people who actually are not in the political arena and make sense about all this. You know, I mean, even if we have to go to a university level and hire, you know, sociologists, you know, we have $26 million. I bet we could get, you know, some really honest consulting from, you know, universities and implement that.
Well, you know, the frustrating thing is that the city of Portland hires certified smart people a lot, and they get reports. I mean, we just got the latest report from the OIC, the organization that reviews police death in custodies and excessive force cases. We pay a lot of money for certified smart people to tell us what we already know.
Exactly. We all already know this.
Yes, yes. Excuse me for cutting you off, Brian, but even after we pay the money to the certified smart people, we don't actually use the information that they give us.
Yeah, because, you know, the end of the line is Mike Reese.
Yes.
The end of the line is like...
Well, the end of the line is the police commissioner, which is Charlie Hales.
Okay, right, exactly. And you know what? And we need them to come out, and they need to be grilled onto their agenda. And if their agenda is to create a fascist, you know, militarized police force, I mean, is that Portland?
Right, right. That's absolutely right.
And I'll shut up.
No, I really appreciate your call, and I appreciate your interest. But I want to go back to your original statement. Do you think I'm giving too much facts that people are just, like, going to sleep? Or?
Well, you know what, Joanne, I don't think so, and okay. I think it's really important. But I think what's going on here is, you know, it's the old right-wing thing is And, you know, Nixon was famous for it.
Right.
Just bog down and get everybody so bogged
right.
down in all the details
right.
that we will never be able to get up from it.
That's right.
And where they, you know, just sign off on, you know, whatever they want and do whatever they want. And you know, we're still discussing things that should have been fixed years ago, right. and they're on to something new.
Well, you know, we're going to talk in the second half hour kind of about what is the role of people, right, to actually be able to influence this settlement agreement, because there is going to be a fairness hearing. The judge is going to set the date. The judge is going to take testimony. And so the question is, how does the people who have as of yet not been able to have any impact on the settlement agreement, what it looks like, what's in it, what the priorities are, how does the public get the opportunity to really have their say at this fairness hearing? And so for me, that's the most important information I can provide today. And
okay.
that's why I'm giving the background, because everybody hasn't been living police accountability for the last decade like I have.
Right. I understand. And you're doing a great job. I just worry about people getting so burned out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I think the most important thing, but that's why I don't want to give people just my opinion. I want people to actually read both the investigation and the settlement agreement, because if you don't read it, you don't know how egregiously bad our police department really is.
Well, you know what, I'll leave you with this. It's what my great uncle said, and he was a lawyer and a state senator in Florida. He said, "All a liar is going to do in an argument is lie some more."
Right.
and that's all we get out of these people, you know. And anyway, you have a great one, Joanne. God bless you.
Thank you so much. God bless you too. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. As Brian said, you know, it's easy to get overwhelmed with just all the data, but we're going to get back to the real big picture, and the big picture is important. We're going to spend $26 million, less us, the people, figure out what's the most appropriate way to spend it and whether or not what's being proposed makes any sense at all. And Paul? Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm
well, that's not a trick question.
For starters, I was listening to you talk to that guy, and it's been way more than a decade you've been working on this. How long ago did Vera Katz put you and Alan Graf and a bunch of other people on that committee?
Oh my gosh, it was like the 19. I just had that date. I think
it was over 15 years ago, I'm pretty sure.
You know, that was when I wasn't working full time. I've only been working full time for the last decade.
anyway. So,
but you're right. I've been working on police accountability for almost my entire time here in Oregon.
Well, and I don't get to listen to your show very much anymore, but I really appreciate you going over all these details, because I do think it is important that people understand the details. And I know that you and Dan Handelman, and there's one or two women that work with him. There's like a handful of people that have been following this. Different people in the press have followed bits and pieces.
That's
but
right.
Anyway, so I got don't worry about. I mean, yeah, you do a good job of putting out the global picture, but I think it is important that everybody understand the details and all this stuff has been going on. And I'm glad you bring this stuff to light, because I do a pretty good job of remembering, but it's easy for people to forget.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, people are busy with their day-to-day lives, right?
Exactly.
People aren't.
A lot of us have to earn a living.
Exactly. And how many of us can afford to spend 3.5 hours at a city council meeting where no decision is made?
Right? Yeah.
So.
But I'm glad you're doing this.
Thank you.
And I want to hear more about the
next steps.
People's hearing, the
fairness hearing.
Fairness hearing.
Yes.
But I just got a couple of comments.
Okay.
One, this guy, Reese, you know, he was on OPB the other day. I didn't hear it.
Yes.
I heard somebody commenting on it.
Right.
You know who he's beginning to remind me of?
Who?
Rowan Atkinson. You know who I'm talking about?
I do. That's a name from the past.
Those of you who forgot who Rowan Atkinson is, he's that British comedian, and he used to be in a police comedy called The Thin Blue Line.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like the most inept, inane cop you've ever seen. Well, I'm sorry, but Reese is beginning to remind me of that, of him.
I can understand that.
And the other thing is that, and I think people need to push, and need to put in the fairness hearing and stuff, need to push for a strong independent review board, IPR, I guess, or whatever it is. And, you know, here's the thing. There are already people in Portland that are capable of doing that job.
That's right.
You know where they work?
Where?
The investigators for the Federal Public Defender. A friend of mine worked there for years.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that do not have subpoena power, that do not have the ability to coerce people, that just go out and find the facts and root the stuff out. And, you know, they overturn the cops and everybody else just by doing good detective work.
Right.
Steve Wax, they work for Stephen Wax.
Oh, yes.
And you know what? There's people there. And, you know, there's people like from Seattle or Chicago or San Francisco that have worked in, like, places like that.
Right.
you give them subpoena power. I mean, they've been giving their attorneys the ammunition to win cases where the cops and the federal prosecutor thought they were going to railroad people, and they overcome that all the time. But anyway.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But one of the things I want to not leave unsaid is that our current IPR system, as the Department of Justice called it, it is a self-defeating accountability system.
Well, I agree. And what I'm saying is there is, because the cops keep saying, well, it takes a cop to investigate. No, it doesn't. And there's people that that do it every day.
Well, and that's Mike Reese's whole story. We don't understand. That's why he had the guy show the slideshow last week about how complicated and intricate investigating police officers are. But yet we continue to read headlines about how Portland police, even their leadership, actually doesn't do an effective job of investigating police officers.
And I've heard the stories about how these private investigators working for the federal public defender, and they do it. They don't have subpoena power. They don't get to coerce somebody. They can't hold the capital punishment needle, or they can't have somebody beat up in the back room, or they can't hold a harsher sentence over people. And they know how to investigate the police, and they do it all the time, and they get through, and they just use some plain common sense stuff. I've heard stories about how when some cop tried to railroad somebody in a pretext stop and all this, and how they just blew them out of the water with some just common sense stuff. There are people that know how to do that.
I absolutely agree with that, Paul. There's certainly people that are capable of being able to conduct those investigations. We just don't have a system currently, and I want to be real clear, we don't have a system currently that investigates police misconduct. We have a system that just kind of rubber stamps whatever the cop says didn't happen.
You're absolutely right. And there's people that know how to do that, and yes, they are available.
Well, that is really great information. But the big picture is we shouldn't be trying to fix a system that is so fatally flawed that it will never, ever work.
I just remember Dick Gregory talking on TV a long time ago about the Constitution.
Right.
And it says, it is our duty.
Yes, right. It is absolutely true. Thank you so much for your call.
Have a good day.
You have a fabulous day as well. We have a lot of work to do. And the next big thing will be the fairness hearing that Judge Michael Simon will give us a date on November 18th, and he will tell us on November 18th how that process will work. I'm going to bring into the conversation now Dr. T. Allen Bethel, who's the co-chair of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, as well as my friend, as well as a longtime activist in attempting to hold our police department accountable. Good morning, Dr. Bethel. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Joanne, and thanks for taking this call.
You are very welcome, and thank you for calling in. So I've been laying out for the first half hour to the listeners what the problem is, that I explained the press conference yesterday. I went through the investigation. I went through what is now the settlement agreement that looks like it's moving forward. Many of my callers want to know, so what's next? What do we do now?
Well, what we do now is, I think, several things. Number one, we must get ready for the fairness hearing as soon as Judge Simons sets that date, as you said, on the 18th. He will give us some more instructions on how that works. We must be ready for that. Secondly, and probably simultaneously, we must continue to watch the process that has begun between the city, the DOJ, and the PPA. As was indicated on yesterday, there is still the vote to approve this agreement by the PPA, and still the vote that's coming for the council. I believe the council is ready to move forward and that they will be voting affirmative to put this into place. We do call on all of our citizens to make phone calls, write letters, drop emails to our city councilors telling them that we want this to go forward and begin to push for pressure to correct. And yet sometimes you have to tear down some things and rebuild what is needed to uphold the accountability and bring about the reforms.
That's absolutely true. And so did the press conference yesterday give any indication when the agreement would be in front of the city council again? Is that before or after the fairness hearing? Do you know?
I didn't get a direct sense as to when it's going to come, but both Mayor Hales did indicate that he was going to be asking the council to vote for that. And as I looked at the faces of the council members who were present, and all of them were present, they all nodded in agreement that they would move forward with that. So I'm hoping that that comes up very, very soon.
Wonderful. And this afternoon at 5 p.m., Dr. Bethel, there's going to be an AMA general meeting, and we will be talking about setting up a process for the fairness hearings, right?
That's correct. The coalition will be meeting this afternoon at 5 p.m. It is being hosted at Maranatha Church, corner 13th and Skidmore, and we will be beginning to talk about that fairness hearing, gathering ideas so we can get a process and strategy together to move forward.
Wonderful. Any other information you want to make sure we put out now and why I have you?
Well, I just want to say that as people gather stories about things that are happening with the Bureau, be they good or bad, we want you to document those and get those to us, you know, not realize how helpful they will be in presenting a case as more and more testimonials we have. It helps bring about the pressure and understanding that there is something that is wrong and something that needs to be corrected. And as I heard the earlier caller mention, that there are people available who can do this work and help hold the accountability factor. We need information so that we can get those persons, and we need the community to say we want the accountability and stand behind that. As I said to one reporter on yesterday who says once the settlement agreement goes in, that's it, nothing else can be done. I said you forget one fact that we tend to always forget is that we the people empowered the politicians.
Right.
We the people can remove the politicians. We the people can change what we want to change whenever we want that change to occur. We must continue to remember that our voices do count.
That's absolutely very well said, Dr. Bethel. But when you were saying that, it occurred to me that for the community, this is the baseline. It appears that for the PPA and for the city of Portland, this is the ceiling. And so there's a difference between this is just the beginning of a process that will fundamentally reform what's broken in Portland Police, rather than this is the solution, and once we enter the settlement agreement, everything will be lovely.
No, but that is far, far from the truth, that everything will be lovely. But indeed, I do believe that others, PPA and others, are looking at this as this is the maximum of what we must do because the DOJ said do this. Mm-hmm. We, the community, need to understand that this is a beginning point. This is trying to bring about an attempt to correct what we can see right now are issues and problems. And though there is, on some parts, those who do not want to admit this, right, we must continue to say this is a beginning, this is a floor, and we want to go further and further. We've seen a few things that have happened in a few cases between the CRC, before the CRC, the IPR, mm-hmm, and we can continue to go on to some news items that really tell us and point to the fact that this Bureau really needs more transparency and accountability, and we're still on this marathon. This race is not over.
Thank you so much, sir. That's 5 p.m. today at Maranatha Church at 13th and Skidmore. The AMA Coalition General Meeting will take place starting at 5. Thank you so much, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you. Have a great day as well.
Thank you. Bye now.
Yeah.
What's coming up today on KBOO at 9, a special one-hour version of Fight the Empire. Host Pear speaks with Lester Brown, founder of World Watch Institute, on the geopolitics of food scarcity. At 10, hear Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoint is off today. Instead, we'll hear Law and Disorder, featuring a look at the Pan-African Solidarity Campaign regarding the International Criminal Court. The campaign says even though human rights violations and war crimes are happening around the world, the court only prosecutes cases against Africans. Thank KBOO members for your generous support of our fall membership drive. If you missed that opportunity, don't be sad. Just go to KBOO.FM, click the tip jar, and donate that way. Do we have a caller on the line? Hello, Michael. It looks like we lost Michael. Hopefully, Michael will call back. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We talked to Dr. Bethel about some of the early planning that will take place in the community around preparing community members to participate in the fairness hearing. What we know already is that Judge Simon has already said he will take testimony in any way that the public wants to provide it. He will accept video testimony. He will accept written testimony. He will accept email testimony. He will take testimony any way the community is able to provide that testimony. So it is my hope and my desire to work with both the AMA Coalition and others to set up community hearings where we can actually help people understand what's both in the investigation and the settlement agreement, and then be able to tape people's testimony that day so that we can collect those videotapes and make sure that they are presented to Judge Simon. We want to make it as easy as possible for regular people, especially regular people who have had experiences with Portland Police, to be able to get their voices heard through this process. Why do I harp on this issue so much? Because police accountability is one of those issues that has community consequences that spread throughout the community. And what I mean by that is I'll give you a perfect example. This Saturday, we are burying Fred Bryant. You may remember the name Fred Bryant because he was the dad of Keaton Otis, who was shot and killed on May 12, 2010 by Portland police officers. The officer's own words when they pulled him over were they pulled him over because he looked like he might be a gang member. He was shot 28 bullets. He was shot with 28 bullets. He died at the scene. A officer was shot at the scene, who we believe was shot by other officers. And so Fred Bryant spent the last 3.5 years of his life going everywhere he could, talking about trying to get justice for his son. Because just like Trayvon Martin, no black man in any city should be worried about dying because they look like they might be a gang member. And we are supposedly sending out gang enforcement teams that are well trained. Well, what we know is Portland police officers don't know a gang member if they fall over one. They just assume any black or brown youth is a gang member. That's how they decide who a gang member is. And so the collateral damage that happens to a community when they go through decades of non-police accountability, when police are free to treat people unconstitutionally, the unintended collateral damage is significant. And so Fred Bryant's death won't go down as a death at the hands of the police, but it is absolutely a death that Portland police officers have contributed to. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Sherelle. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello, Joanne. I'm very sad to hear of that fellow's
Fred Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bryant's passing, and I'm sure he was, you know, that the last years of his life were very sad, but he did everything he could to,
yes, he did,
make the community a better place than mm-hmm. what his child experienced. So
that is correct.
That's sad, but it's very commendable, highly commendable. I have two fast questions.
Okay.
Number one, what caused the detour of the Department of Justice from really looking into the civil rights violations against the black community in Portland? And then number two, just in chatting here a couple minutes ago, the question of why cannot police assist in mental health crises with nets, or my suggestion was a tranquilizing dart, but I think a net is a better idea for a mentally ill person in crises rather than killing them. Why not net them, or at least tranquilize dart instead of tase or shoot? Has anybody asked them those questions? I'm sure you have, but I'll just get off the air now and listen to what you have to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All you do.
Thank you. I appreciate your call today.
Sure.
And so I'll start with your first question first. Why did the Department of Justice do the detour, do the bait and switch, when we asked them to investigate whether African-American civil rights were being violated by Portland police, and they did the bait and switch to mental health? The short answer to that question is that Tom Perez, who was then the assistant U.S. The assistant director of the Civil Rights Division for the U.S. Department of Justice, he said that we should remember that currently race is not a factor that you can take to the court, to the federal court, unless you can prove intent. And if you remember what about the case in New York with the police, the only reason they were able to prove that the police were targeting black and brown youth was because police officers recorded the roll call conversation. And so it was clear that the intent was to target black and brown youth. So in Oregon, we're not that blatant. We don't tell folks that we're going out targeting black and brown youth. We just do it. Because when we say gang, we all know that that means black or brown youth. So that's what the Department of Justice said, is that basically they could only go back 2 years, and there weren't enough cases in the two-year period of time to be able to prove intent as it related to African Americans. But during a two-year look back, they were able to make the case for people with mental health issues or people perceived to have mental health issues. Your question about why don't they use something else? I think that Portland police are the wrong people to be going on mental health calls. I know people who work in the mental health profession, and mental health professionals have ways of calming people without resorting to weapons. Portland police officers use what's available on their tool belt, and what's on their tool belt are weapons of torture, is basically what's on their tool belt. And so if you take a hammer to a party, everything looks like a nail. And so for Portland police, when they show up, if they say do X and you don't, then that means you're not following orders and you're entitled to any torture they want to meter out. That's what we have to fix, the whole mindset. I think that there may be a few Portland police officers who have the mental capacity to be compassionate when they engage with people who are suffering from a crisis. But the uniform itself is intimidating when you're not in a mental health crisis. So if you're in a crisis and someone comes at you aggressively, that is the last thing that's going to make you safe. And that's exactly what the Department of Justice found. When people called saying, I haven't seen my neighbor, or my neighbor's upstairs and he's screaming and I think something's going on, and Portland police, who were sent to help, actually tased the man 4 times in his own apartment. Man's buck naked and he's suffering from a diabetic coma, a diabetic shock. And the police first response is to tase him. And then when the tasing didn't stop him, they punched him a few times. That's why you've got to read the investigation. It's not my words. These are the Department of Justice words in the investigation of Portland police. We're going to go back to the phone line. Naya, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I want to say thank you. I appreciate what you're saying about all of this. People think that it doesn't happen every day. It does happen every day. I've walked around the streets of Portland. I work at a major corporation, and I go downtown for lunch every day, and I see people getting harassed. It's mm-hmm. It never fails. What I have seen, though, in two different communities, one in Eugene, there are people who work with the police as liaisons to help assess situations when a police officer thinks that there's a somebody in a mental health crisis, and they come along on the call to help, and they keep their scanners available to them. However, I would like to submit something for thought. Why don't we just use nets on everybody and stop shooting people? That would be really nice. I am actually a licensed concealed carry. I carry concealed weapon, but that's a last resort. You always want to try and run away if
that's
someone
right.
wants to hurt you. You always, you never, ever, ever want to hurt someone, ever. Even if they mean to do you harm, you try to get away. It is a last resort if
that's
someone
right.
wants to kill you. I've been stalked. I've been followed. I've been, people stop me when I'm jogging. Gentlemen want my phone number, and that's harmless. That's fine.
Right.
But when I'm walking out of my office at night, and it's 10 o'clock, and my parking lot, it's a block away, and it's a kind of a sketchy neighborhood, my building's safe, but I have to walk. It's like the gauntlet.
Right,
I have to get there safely, and I'm always looking over my shoulder. But, as far as the police go, I just don't know if they forget their training. I don't know if they've seen so much... so much violence that they're just used to it. And like you said, everything looks like a nail. So why don't we get a softer hammer, maybe?
You just raised a great point, and it's one that I forgot to mention today. Training is key.
Agreed.
And unfortunately, we have a police chief who believes only police can train police. We have been attempting for years to open up the training so that police and community members are side by side training community police officers, because there should be a mutual expectation. We should be able to say, this is how we want you to patrol our community. And then they need to get the tactical training that they need to be effective police officers. But there should be a joint community police training. And so how do we fix that? And we've been asking Reese for this as long as he's been police chief, and he believes that only police can train police, which is ludicrous. And so what do? We pay $10 million to build Portland Police a training facility so that they are more isolated and only talking to themselves. So if you train to this mindset that you kill first and ask questions later, and you reinforce that because that's all you're hearing, you're not training with other police departments. Washington County, their former sheriff, Ron Louie, is a national expert on how to train police departments to de-escalate. You don't hear de-escalation come out of the mouth of Mike Reese, our current police chief. So we just need a new police chief. We need a police chief with a commitment to making cultural changes. And we need the community to demand that it's time for action, because we've been talking about this way too long.
I'm going to say something really crude and cynical. It's a lot harder. I mean, it's a lot hotter to be Rambo with a hard on than it is to be Gandhi with a feather. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We are about 5 minutes to until the end of the program. So I want to once again let you know that the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform will have their general meeting today at 5 p.m. at Maranatha Church, located in Northeast Portland off of 13th and Northeast Shaver. If you want to get involved in actually helping us to plan, how do we help prepare the community for the fairness hearing that's coming? I'm hopeful that the fairness hearing will be scheduled for sometime in mid-January, which means that would give us December to start holding community forums where we can educate people about both the investigation and the settlement agreement. And it's important to couple the two, because if you only, which is what the city would like us to do and the PPA would like us to do, if you only focused on the settlement agreement, then what you're focused on is the solutions, but you don't know what the problem is. So you have to look at the investigation to find out how egregious the behavior of some of Portland police officers are to understand what the proposed remedies are. And I will say again that they don't match up well. They don't, the, if we have police officers who are treating people unconstitutionally, when they show up, when they believe people have mental health issues, then sending police officers on mental health calls would seem to be the least likely intelligent thing to do. But that is, in fact, my opinion. But you may have another opinion. So, again, that meeting will happen. Also, follow city council, because the announcement yesterday that both the police union contract will be coming in front of the Portland City Council, as well as the settlement agreement, will be coming back in front of the city council. But we don't know the timing about whether or not that happens before or after the fairness hearing. Have a caller on the line. Hello, Mitch. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you for the program you're doing and the insight you're bringing. And just to accent the point on how resistant institutions can be to reform, I would have your listeners Google up on their internet. This American Life did a piece on a New York City cop named Adrian, I think it's Schoolhouse. And he was a cop who tried to resist the way that the stop and frisk was being enforced.
Right.
And it is an amazing bit of radio art that gets into the psychology, not just of what happens when a street beat cop tries to stand up to the policies coming down from above and do the right thing,
right.
But what goes on institutionally to cover the tracks. And I think it really mirrors what is happening with Mike Reese and everything since Foxworth has left.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting, right? Foxworth lost his job because he didn't tell the truth. And Reese continues to not tell the truth, and he hasn't lost his job yet. So it's interesting the difference between how some people are treated in those positions and others are.
It's the impunity that adds to the corruption.
Yes, it's absolutely true. And when you surround yourself with people that all are like you, you're prone to make those kind of mistakes. I think what's shocking is that there's been no accountability for those mistakes. But here's our opportunity, right? Rare do we get the Department of Justice to come to town and tell us what we already know. But it's now up to us to figure out what to do with that information to truly reform this system, because it's truly broken and no amount of press releases are going to make it better. It's going to take us to fix it.
Absolutely, and you're right to press for change from outside, because it isn't coming from inside.
No, it definitely will not. We will never have a police officer within Portland Police Bureau that's going to make the fundamental cultural shift that has to happen. There's no question about that.
And again, the thing about the This American Life segment on New York,
right,
is that what happens when cops on the beat, who are the lowest people on the totem pole,
right,
do want to act properly,
right,
they will be beat down from above, and the people who beat them down from above get off scot-free.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. 503-231-8187. We got just about a minute left in the program. So one more time, if you didn't take the opportunity to call the mayor's office last week, because last week I was telling you about, as part of this reform effort I've been talking about, the mayor has a police policy director in his office. And I announced last week that the person he hired is a low-level lieutenant within Portland Police Bureau. She is going to resign, but she has the opportunity to go back within 3 years of that resignation. It is the wrong. There's no logical reason that you would put a police officer, a low-ranking police officer, in the mayor's office to provide oversight of the police reform effort. It is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. It is insulting to community members that want real reform. And if the mayor allows that to stand, it will go down as one of the worst decisions that have come out of his office since he has been there. And if you'd like to share your opinion with the mayor, his number is 503-823-4120. Because this young woman hasn't started yet. She's supposed to start on the 18th. And I think it's a mistake. So maybe he'll change his mind and actually get somebody in there that has a reform agenda, that doesn't care where the bodies are buried, and will demand accountability. And if we don't have the right people there, you know, a police chief is an at-will job. And so if we don't have the one that we need to get the one that will reform what we have. I'm Joanne Hardesty. I'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland on this very, very rainy Thursday morning, just a minute now before 9 o'clock. Coming up at 10 o'clock today, it is Eric Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Coming up at 10:15 this morning, Flashpoints is off today. Instead, we'll hear Law and Disorder, featuring a look at the Pan-African Solidarity Campaign regarding the International Criminal Court. The campaign says even though human rights violations and war crimes are happening around the world, the court only prosecutes cases against Africans. At 11 on Between the Covers, Portland writer Rob Yardumian discusses his debut novel, The Sound of Songs Across the Water, and the accompanying music CD, Sing With Me, Brother, For We Have Sinned. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the topic is independent booksellers with guest Michael Hicks of Black Rose Books and Phyllis Benton of Midnight Ramble Films and host Obie Hill of Reflections Mirror Image Books. But first, Teresa Mitchell is still on vacation, so we'll have a special one-hour version of Fight the Empire with host Per Fogring. Today he speaks with Lester Brown, founder of the World Watch Institute, on the geopolitics of food scarcity. And that is coming up next on KBOO.
45 DJs play
45 RPM records
all day.
Tune into KBOO on November 16th from noon to midnight
for a special 45th anniversary celebration.
DJs will play 15-minute sets of 45 RPM records.
While from noon to 8 p.m., we'll have an open house birthday party at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue with refreshments,
birthday cake, station tours, and more.
So join us November 16th.
In person at KBOO from noon to 8 p.m. and on air from noon to midnight.
To celebrate our 45th year of serving the musical, political, and cultural needs of the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world.
For more information, go to kboo.fm/45RPM2013.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdx.